Presenting A Christmas Carol from a novel by Charles Dickens. Read by Michael Treloar. Produced for radio by John Rowland. A production of Main FM, Central Victoria.
Marley was dead to begin with. There is no doubt about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Scrooge signed it, and Scrooge's name was good upon change for anything he chose to put his hand to. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. Scrooge knew he was dead? Of course he did. How could it be otherwise? Scrooge and he were partners for I don't know how many years. Scrooge was his sole executor, his sole administrator, his sole assign, his sole residuary legatee, his sole friend and sole mourner. The mention of Marley's funeral brings me back to the point I started from. There is no doubt that Marley was dead. This must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come of the story I'm going to relate. Scrooge never painted out old Marley's name. There it stood years afterwards, above the warehouse door, Scrooge and Marley. The firm was known as Scrooge and Marley. Sometimes people new to the business called Scrooge Scrooge, and sometimes Marley, but he answered to both names. It was all the same to him. Oh, but he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, Scrooge. A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. Once upon a time, of all the good days of the year, on Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. It was cold, bleak, biting weather, foggy withal, and he could hear the people in the court outside go wheezing up and down, beating their hands upon their breasts and stamping their feet upon the pavement stones to warm them. The door to Scrooge's counting house was open, that he might keep his eye upon his clerk, who in a dismal little cell beyond, a sort of tank, was copying letters. "Merry Christmas, Uncle! God save you!" cried a cheerful voice. It was the voice of Scrooge's nephew, who came upon him so quickly that this was the first intimation he had of his approach.
"Bah!" said Scrooge. "Humbug!
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? You don't mean that, I'm sure."
"I do. Merry Christmas! What right have you to be merry? What reason have you to be merry? You're poor enough."
"Come then," returned the nephew gaily. "What right have you to be dismal? What reason have you to be morose? You're rich enough." Scrooge, having no better ready on the spur of the moment, said,
"Bah!"
again, and followed it up with,
"Humbug!"
"Don't be cross, Uncle."
"What else can I be, when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas! Out upon Merry Christmas! What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money, a time for finding yourself a year older and not an hour richer, a time for balancing your books and having every item in 'em through a round dozen of months presented dead against you? If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart. He should!"
"Uncle!"
"Nephew," returned the uncle sternly, "keep Christmas in your own way, and let me keep it in mine."
"Keep it? But you don't keep it."
"Let me leave it alone, then. Much good may it do you. Much good has it ever done you."
"There are many things from which I might have derived good, by which I have not profited, I dare say. Christmas among the rest. But I am sure I have always thought of Christmas time, when it has come round. Apart from the veneration due its sacred name and origin, if anything belonging to it can be apart from that, is a good time. A kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. The only time I know of in the calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good, and it will do me good, and I say God bless it. The clerk, in letting Scrooge's nephew out, had let two other people in. "Scrooge and Marley's, I believe," said one of the gentlemen, referring to his list. "Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?"
"Mr. Marley has been dead these 7 years," Scrooge replied. "He died 7 years ago this very night."
"We have no doubt his liberality is well represented by his surviving partner," said the gentleman, presenting his credentials. "At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge," said the gentleman, taking up a pen, "it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts, sir."
"Are there no prisons?" asked Scrooge.
"Plenty of prisons," said the gentleman, laying down the pen again.
"And the union workhouses, are they still in operation?"
"They are. Still, I wish I could say they were not."
"The treadmill and the poor law are in full vigour, then?"
"Both very busy, sir. What shall I put you down for?"
"Nothing."
"You wish to remain anonymous?"
"I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me what I wish, gentlemen, that is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments I have mentioned. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there."
"Many can't go there, and many would rather die."
"If they would rather die," said Scrooge, "they had better do it and decrease the surplus population."
Seeing clearly that it would be useless to pursue their point, the gentlemen withdrew. At length, the hour of shutting up the counting house arrived.
"You'll want all day tomorrow, I suppose," said Scrooge.
"If quite convenient, sir."
"It's not convenient, and it's not fair. If I was to stop half a crown for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound."
The clerk smiled faintly.
"And yet you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work."
The clerk observed that it was only once a year.
"A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December," said Scrooge, buttoning his great coat to the chin. "But I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier the next morning."
The clerk promised that he would, and Scrooge walked out with a growl. Scrooge took his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern, and having read all the newspapers and beguiled the rest of the evening with his banker's books, went home to bed. He lived in chambers which had once belonged to his deceased partner. He closed his door and locked himself in.
"Humbug," said Scrooge, and walked across the room.
After several turns, he sat down again. As he threw his head back in the chair, his glance happened to rest upon a bell, a disused bell, that hung in the room and communicated, for some purpose now forgotten, with a chamber in the highest story of the building. It was with great astonishment and with a strange, inexplicable dread that, as he looked, he saw this bell begin to swing. It swung so softly in the outset that it scarcely made a sound. But soon it rang out loudly, and so did every bell in the house. This might have lasted half a minute or a minute, but it seemed an hour. The bells ceased, as they had begun, together. They were succeeded by a clanking noise, deep down below, as if some person were dragging a heavy chain over the casks in the wine merchant's cellar. Scrooge then remembered to have heard that ghosts in haunted houses were described as dragging chains. The cellar door flew open with a booming sound, and then he heard the noise much louder on the floors below, then coming up the stairs, then coming straight towards his door.
"It's humbug still," said Scrooge. "I won't believe it."
His colour changed, though, when, without pause, it came on through the heavy door and passed into the room before his eyes. Upon its coming in, the dying flame leapt up as though it cried, "I know him, Marley's ghost," and fell again.
"How now?" said Scrooge, caustic and cold as ever. "What do you want with me?"
"Much,"
Marley's voice, no doubt about it.
"Who are you?
Ask me who I was."
"Who were you, then?" said Scrooge, raising his voice. "You're particular for a shade."
"In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley."
"You're always a good friend to me," said Scrooge. "Thank ye."
"You will be haunted,"
resumed the ghost,
"by three spirits."
Scrooge's countenance fell almost as low as the ghost's had done.
I think I'd rather not," said Scrooge.
"Without their visits, you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first tomorrow, when the bell tolls one."
"Couldn't I take them all at once and have it over with?"
"Expect the second on the next night at the same hour. The third upon the next night, when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate."
He tried to say humbug, but stopped at the first syllable, and being, from the emotions he had undergone, or the fatigues of the day, or his glimpse of the invisible world, or the dull conversation of the ghost, or the lateness of the hour, much in need of repose, went straight to bed without undressing, and fell asleep upon the instant.